Hello, this is Susan Smith Nash, and you're listening to The Fringe Journal. Good Deed Society, Stalker, Chapter 2. Kiffy, you're in serious trouble this time, said Mom. She was sitting at the kitchen table, and she had a stack of letters in front of her. Her face, always pale from too much time inside, was even more pasty and blotchy than ever. Her hair, though, was perfect. It was cut in a smooth brown bob. She was wearing the same outfit she always wore at home. Black, long-sleeved knit shirt, khaki slacks, and dark brown mock croc Cole Haan loafers. It was a far cry from the flamboyant outfits she wore when she attended events. Wow, news travels fast. How did Mom know what happened at school? Have you been crying? I asked. I was trying to forestall the unpleasant conversation looming ahead. Do you know anyone who is angry with you? The person who has been sending me weird letters has started to send them about you now. Mom held up a photograph. I leaned forward to get a better look. It was a photograph of me ordering a taco salad at Chica Blanca. There was another shot of me sipping on a cappuccino at the local purveyor of fine coffee drinks. So, everyone has a camera phone, I said. What does the letter say? It's like the ones to me. There's nothing, really. Just a big piece of paper with song lyrics, she said. The entire song? That would be new, I said. I was not really very interested in Mom's obsessed fans. This particular fan liked to send the titles and snippets from popular radio hits, mainly from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. No, the same thing. This time, though, they are sending your photo. Here's the song. Does it mean anything to you? Mom held up a folded piece of paper. She opened it. I could see the words. Now, okay, the only songs I knew in entirety were Guantanamera and the protest songs from Joan Baez's Gracias a la Vida. So, of course, I was unlikely to recognize any others. Okay, well, so here it went. The lyrics. Cherish is a word I use to describe all these feelings that I hold inside, I read. I looked at her. Sorry, Mom, that means nothing to me. David Cassidy, said Mom softly. What's that, a group? Mom looked wistful. The Partridge Family. Oh, that brings back memories. A family of birds? I played dumb, but I could sense where this was going. It must have been a song from Mom's past. It was. It reminded Mom of her glory days. You see, Mom basically lives off royalties and residuals from reruns of Family Plot, a popular and, well, I will say weird, television series about a family of vampires who live in a cemetery frequented by grave line tours. Because it is the place to be buried if you're a celebrity. Mom was a young, prepubescent child actress in the series' heyday. Her character, Anna, or Little Anna, was an adorable nymph who always wore the same outfit, a cute private school uniform with short plaid pleated skirt, white shirt, knee-high socks, black Mary Jane flats, and a private school jacket. With her hair in pigtails or braids, bows, and a winsome smile, Anna was adored by fans of all age groups. family plot took place in a cemetery located in Hollywood, of course, and the opening credits show vampires taking old Polaroids of themselves posing at the tombstone of Marilyn Monroe, Robert Blake's murdered wife, celebrities from the 1940s, and more. In a nice touch, you get to see the Polaroids develop, and you see that, well, guess what? Vampires do not show up in Polaroids. It was like a quirky concept. The family plot vampire family lived in a modest suburban house with a flower-lined brick footpath and a nicely painted wood trim. It looked amazingly like our house. I returned to the photos. A chill crept over me. Mom, I hate these photos. But they're not recent, and I think someone could have printed them from the Goose's MySpace site. Don't call your brother Gus a goose, said Mom. She focused on the photos again. Your hair looked prettier when it was long and before you put brunette streaks in it. You're a natural blonde. You should play it up, said Mom. Shoulder-length blonde with brown streaks? Well, in my opinion, it makes you look mousy. Wow, Mom, you know how to just make me feel absolutely great. I tried to keep the sarcasm from my voice, but, well, I failed. I looked at the photos. There was another of me taken a few months ago when the weather was still warm. I was wearing my lime green and hot pink bikini and diving into the neighborhood pool. When the weather was warm, I swam every day, so I could not pinpoint when the photograph was taken. In fact, the photos were all of me in my favorite places around town. Mom, this is no big deal. Everyone has access to those photos. Does everyone have the need to send your mother creepy letters? Do they have the need to target the mother's daughter? Someone is very troubled, Kithy. Honestly, I did not know what to think. I preferred to think it was one of Mom's creepy fans. Fans could not seem to let go of Mom's role in the family plot. Mom was not the star, but perhaps it was because little Anna was so innocent, even as she blossomed. She started out as a kindergartner, and then, 5 seasons later, emerged as the prepubescent steam sealer and teen magazine darling. The series was canceled the season after she appeared on the cover of Tiger Beat and Teen Fever 5 times. All in all, it had been a great run. 8 years. She had gone from a 5-year-old to a 13-year-old, 2 months after the last shoot. Both of Mom's parents were killed in a car accident. Her circumstances made her vulnerable. I guess I should feel more empathy, but I just can't. Did she not realize that she was the biggest soft target on the planet and bait for every opportunistic gigolo on the block? It was hard to know what to do or think. What about Gus? I asked. It was a foolish question, but hey, I was at a loss. Might as well share the joy with the kid brother, right? Even if he is a half-brother. Has anyone sent letters about Gus? That's not funny, Kithy. This is a serious matter. You should not make light of it. Mom, I said, refusing to overreact, you've been getting odd fan letters forever. They are really creepy now, since your fans only know you through 25-year-old reruns, and they think that maybe you're still a teenager. I think I look good for my age, everything considered. Mom preened herself. At least I never gave myself those huge lip implants like Meg Ryan, and I never got addicted to heroin or prescription drugs like Tatum O'Neill. Being a child star had affected Mom in a profound way. In my opinion, everything considered, in the looks department, okay, Mom was okay. But, hey, she wore way too much makeup. And she had an obsession with designer bags. That was something I hated. Ruefully, it occurred to me that Mom would fit in at my high school more than I did. Designer bags were big at my high school. It had gotten to the point that people were renting them from an online service that would charge a fee per month to rent an authentic Balenciaga, Gucci, or Kate Spade bag. That was okay for them. However, I preferred to create my own look. It was something I put together from thrift stores and cheap department stores. You'd be surprised how the quality of a low-end department store brand was really better than the designers, especially when it came to staples like knit shirts, underwear, and socks. Someone should have explained to me, I guess, that having the right name brand was like a membership to a certain peer group at school. But hey, by the time I figured it out, it was too late. So the fact that I created my own brand was, well, frankly, weirdly liberating. And yet, well, it was isolating at the same time. Kithy, you need to take a look at reality. Mom, I'm not worried. Everyone has images of everyone else. I don't have a MySpace site yet, but, well, everyone else does. Reality? It was hard for me to be complimentary when it came to her grip on reality. Basically, Mom had none. Mom's grip on reality had slipped a long time ago. Foster, Gus's dad, was gone. Foster was not my dad. He was, technically speaking, dad number three. I thought it was interesting that Mom preferred to focus on the stalker and not on her husband. On the other hand, maybe losing yet another husband was too painful to talk about, at least to your hypercritical 15-year-old daughter, who firmly believed that offense is the best defense, and was busy making hostile comments in order to deflect the attention from what was happening at school. I assume that Mom sent Dad number three on his way without breathing even a word to me, or to Gus, for that matter. One day, Foster was making one of his famous stinky anchovy and onion omelets, and the next day, he was gone. All he left was an oil stain in the driveway where his old, leaky Range Rover used to be parked. My real dad, the dad I don't really remember, but who used to send me occasional presents and a card for my birthday and major holidays, roughly once a month, went incommunicado about 5 months ago. I have missed him, even though I no longer have much of a mental picture of him in my head. I miss the cards. Each greeting card, generally of mountains, flowers, or some scene from nature, came with a $50 bill tucked into a blank piece of paper. The cards were invariably signed, "Love, Dad," and the bill would be crisp and new. I never told Mom about the cash. It was enough for her to know about the cards. Anyway, I never told Mom that Dad had gone incommunicado. I am half convinced that Dad got a job overseas somewhere. That would explain why the mail has been slow. But back to Foster. My personal opinion is that Mom frightened him away. And, well, I can understand that. Perhaps she did something so hateful or menacing that he was afraid to get in touch with his own son. It's hard to believe, really, but, well, hey, who knows? Mom really has a way with a gentleman. Mom would blame someone or something else. That's Mom for you. She would probably claim that it was this crazy stalker person who has been sending her weird letters for a year. And now they've turned to me. Who knows? Maybe they've started on Foster. And, well, that's why he left. And, well, come to think of it, is that why Dad left? Is that why Dad's communications with me have stopped altogether? I'm not letting Dad off the hook so easily. Hasn't the guy ever heard of instant messaging, MySpace, or Facebook? And, well, what would be wrong with regular old email? If he does not want to have a relationship with me face-to-face and just through cars and gifts of money, that's okay. I can live with that. Just don't disappear. Somewhere in the back of my mind, the thought popped in that it might not have been my real dad sending me the cars and money after all. I pushed that idea away as fast as I could. That idea made my gut twist up. Mom sorted through the letters and laid out the photos of me. Yes, your hair definitely looked better in those pictures. She seemed to have forgotten the photos she was perusing were from either a stalker or a deranged fan. Neither possibility was at all positive, but you think that she was looking at proofs from a photo shoot for a magazine. Mom, I don't know what to think. I need to clear my head. I turned to leave the kitchen, but I'm telling you, they could have been taken anywhere. In fact, I think they might have actually been on Gus's MySpace site. Mom's crisis was definitely not my crisis. My crisis was a real crisis. The incident at school loomed. Right now, I needed to get to the phone and leave it off the hook. Mom did not need to get any calls from school administrators, at least not right at this moment. If I could keep her distracted, perhaps I could resolve the problem without any interference. I hope you've enjoyed Chapter 2 of The Good Deed Society, Novel Number 1, Stalker. This is Susan Smith Nash, and you've been listening to The Fringe Journal. Thank you very much for your time and your patience, and I totally hope you've enjoyed this.